Hello, party animals. Edward Wilson here. I am the voice behind the Gayborhood podcast. I do brown bear coaching. I am the creator and author of A Gay Man, coming to a bookstore near you. Look, guys, I am sorry that I put the show on pause for so long with no warning. In this episode with Alan today, you're about to hear me talk about moving to Melbourne in 2 days and a bit that I took out at the front where I had 5 clients on in the same day. These are excuses, of course, but the honest truth is that I got far too busy and the priorities in my life shifted so hard away from this show, I have neglected it. And a lot of people have reached out to me, well, about 5, to say they really love it and they really enjoy it. And I've just listened back to me and Alan's chat and I know why. It's not perfect. Some parts are a little boring, but overall, having this beautiful safe space to have real talk between gay men is so freaking joyous. And I do look forward to making more and improving my game and making a tighter show and producing more content for you guys. And I'm sure that I will. Will it run as Gayborhood has run so far? No. Here's why. I'm launching this book, A Gay Man, and I've spent mine and my partner's life savings on it. That's no joke. We're at about $0 and we're about to open the pre-sales. And that's after Kickstarter. So Kickstarter raised $67,000. Huge success. Very pleased with that. And by the way, so I moved to Melbourne for 2 days. And then we did the Kickstarter after we went to Perth for a month to see family and friends. So not our beds, not our homes, not our internet connections. Had to take the laptop. Life's difficult. Get back immediately into the Kickstarter, which ran for a month. And then that was, so, you know, 2.5 months with no Gayborhood. And then I just left it another 3.5. And now it's been about 6 months. We are very settled into Melbourne. But we're about to launch the book and we have almost no cash. So I am focusing on new brown bear coaching clients. So if you're interested, go to brownbearcoaching.com. That is a great source of cash for me. It's my primary income and job and has been for years. And then there's the A Gay Man book, which in pre-sales and live sales, which will be possible within a week or two, is going to be my secondary and perhaps it will come my primary source of income. These things are very real for us. We can't afford rent and bills without income. And Gayborhood was last on the list. It does not generate me any revenue. It takes several hours to make, create, edit, upload. There's monthly fees for stuff, but like, this isn't a sob story. I love this podcast and it does return value to me through people's awareness of coaching and whether or not they want to work with me. Cause what's better than, I don't know, 10, 15 hours of intimate content, me talking to people all about gay stuff, for you to feel that maybe you know me or that you want to work with me. And that has happened in some cases. So it does have a return for me, but it wasn't the number one priority. So for that, again, I apologize. Look forward to this episode with Alan. From here and before now, I have and will continue to have the show on hold. I am moving to YouTube though. There's a lot of coaching content right now. It's currently called Brown Bear Tube or Brown Bear YouTube, but you can search Brown Bear Coaching on YouTube. You will find me. And I look forward to bringing on more regular guys for interviews to talk about their childhood, their journey, their problems, their crises. I will probably be relating it to the book, A Gay Man, and the scenes within there and the universal journey in a lot of my content. Cause again, that's good promotional stuff for me. And I'm actually just a regular guy that needs that solid income. Otherwise my life cannot function. But yeah, there's no reason why I can't keep living, dancing, singing, playing, sharing, laughing, loving with all of the guests and all of you. In that way. So please come find me on YouTube. Keep following me on Insta. It's not my favorite platform. There's been a bit of drama. There's a reel in there that says big drama. You can watch it if you want to. But yeah, such is my life. Thank you so much for listening, guys. As of recording today, you know, May 26, 2023, there's 200 plus downloads on the last episode and over 100 for all the others. So, you know, there's 100 of you out there. Hello. It's a pleasure to have you listen. Thank you for enjoying the ride. Have a wonderful show today. And you can reach out anytime. The best place to catch me is Brown Bear Coaching on Instagram. But otherwise, you can still email me at edward@gayborhoodpodcast.com. The Patreon is gone. Only my friends and family signed up. So again, I always knew that monetizing a podcast was difficult, and it was never meant to be a big deal. But yeah, oof, that did not work. So on that happy note, please enjoy this episode from me and Comet, my baby cat that features in so many of my content posts these days. I hope you enjoy it. Have a wonderful life if we never hear from Gaberhood again, but I suspect that you will, but definitely on YouTube. So look forward to that, and thank you for being along for the ride. Have a great day. Cheers. Bye. It is 7:10 over here in the morning. I've been up for half an hour, and I'm excited to get on with this interview and get to know Alan Smith and share you with the world. What do you want the audience to know about you? What's the basics?
Okay, so I am a life coach, similar to yourself, Ed. I have been going about a year, so I help people mainly with their confidence. It's taken me a while to be able to articulate that concisely, as I've worked with lots of different people, but I tend to find confidence tends to be the thing that holds people back from what it is they really want. So that's a broad capture of it.
Yeah, sure. And how old are you? And are you a gay man? Is that a label that you like?
I neither like it or dislike it. I am a gay man. I certainly am that. I don't mind being calling it, and I am 42.
42. Any problems with being 42? Is it all right?
I love it, actually. Oh. I have no problems with it at all.
That is such a fun answer. And I hope the audience is going to hear why I was so excited to get you on the show. Yes, it's another life coach, but some of my best friends and the most wonderful people I know are life coaches. So, yeah, maybe get used to it. Although, I think, you know, I hope you don't take this as a slight. I'm kind of running out of life coaches to interview. I've got to keep looking for more great guests. You're on the bottom of the list, Alan.
You're in the barrel with me now.
No, you're not on the bottom of the list. Let's blame the logistical difficulties of time and space. All right. Sure. So I want to interview you to get to know the man, the myth, the legend, and just kind of just your life, just about you. So this is a gay show. It's about community. It's about regular gay men. You're more or less a regular gay man. But I think you're particularly interesting and have great insight into a lot of things. We met because we got briefly pulled into a little systemy. Wait, am I getting my hairs crossed? Did we work together for a brief period? Did I find you? We found each other on Instagram, and then we did our threesome with somebody else. The non-sexual coaching threesome. Yeah, that's what we were going to call the group. Yeah, long-distance coaching threesome. Yeah, it didn't take off. It ideas went in different directions, and it wasn't the priority anymore. It was mostly me, so apologies. But here we are.
There's nothing to apologize for. You know, honestly, it was great to connect with you. Look where we are now. It was great to connect with you and share ideas and meet like-minded people. So there's no regrets on my part with that. It was a great experience.
Mm. Oh, thank you. I don't deserve it. All right. So let's start with you as a man and a boy and a gay man and a gay boy. When did you come out?
I was outed when I was about 17, 18 by an ex-boyfriend who took it upon himself to tell my parents.
Oh, geez.
So I was getting myself ready to come out just before that and kept bottling it, if I'm being honest. I kept thinking now's the time. One of my friends had actually come out around that time and didn't get the best reaction. Right. That put me off a little bit. And then I went through a period of, am I gay? Am I ready to label myself with this forever?
Yeah.
If I say it. I knew I was, really. Then it happened that way, unfortunately.
Okay. And what was the reaction like from mum and dad?
My mum's always been incredible. I'll call it out, Ed. I don't think it was any surprise. From being very young, I think there was signs there if you chose to see them, or if you didn't.
Anything in particular? Did you like what? Anything in particular?
Oh, I used to. I mean, one thing that springs to mind is I used to have a habit of putting my mum's dresses on my head.
That's a big one.
I didn't actually wear them as a dress. I just used to put them on.
Oh, on your head. Okay.
As like long hair.
Pretty good.
My kind of 4-hour Kylie Minogue performances with a little
desire
and making them all line up and watch me was probably another
That's so beautiful. So beautiful. Okay. So even though, you know, how was mum and dad's reaction?
Mum, amazing. Dad, reserved, let's say.
Okay. He needed some processing.
Yeah, I think he did. You know, my family and the town that I grew up in just weren't used to. It wasn't a big thing when people came out. It was a big thing, sorry, but it wasn't common.
Yeah.
Where at the time and where I grew up. And I don't think he quite knew how to react.
Yeah.
So
fair enough.
My mum and dad split when I was very young.
Okay.
Lived with him. But I think he found it difficult to say the right words. He's not somebody that expresses emotion readily. So it was a bit of an unspoken about thing for, actually probably still is to a degree, but for quite some time. I don't feel he has a problem with me.
He just doesn't understand you, kind of thing. Different energy.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 17 is quite young for a man who's, what did you say? Sorry, 42? 42?
42 now.
Yeah, so you're 9 years older than me. I like to just, I don't know, I look at it in like 10-year gaps. Because there's some, I don't know. I know some people younger than me that are having a much easier time at school. But I know that 10 years before me, it was even worse at school. And my school experience was difficult enough. It wasn't a free-for-all as it usually was for people 10 years older than me. What was your school experience like with... did anybody know? No, because you were 17, 18. But what was the school environment like?
The school environment was okay. I know some guys in my school did get picked on for being gay. I'll be honest, I don't know if they actually were or weren't the ones that got picked on for it. I think at school people just kind of pick on anything that's different anyway. I got picked on for being left-handed. I got picked on for having red hair. When I say picked on, I wouldn't go as far as calling it bullying. It was just something that people used to call out.
Cool.
Difference.
Sure.
So through school I was okay, but I think I suppressed elements of kind of things that would have given me away at school unconsciously.
Yeah.
Just things that I enjoyed, things that for example, I used to do dance classes when I was really, really young. I was the only guy that went.
Yeah.
It was a class full of girls and me. No one knew about it. It was a very well-kept secret for about a year, 18 months, until the school decided to issue us with medals for something that we'd done at this dance class. And I had to get up in front of everybody and go and collect it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you, teachers. This recognition is everything I wanted. You are so helpful.
You could just tell the whole school that I go to disco dancing lessons. Marvelous.
Yeah, cool. All right. So you mostly skated by, sailed 17 in the morning. Keep going, Ed. You got this. You mostly sailed by under the radar at school then. And so it wasn't a huge problem. You weren't overly bullied or traumatized deeply. But you know that in order to achieve that, you had to be able to hide some of your truth and adjust your presentation of who you are. And so that's the early, you know, some of the early years stories of Alan.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. What I probably did was I wouldn't say kind of I pretended to be something I wasn't. I just suppressed some of it is probably the most accurate description. It's that I didn't choose to share with other people.
Okay. Well, either you're still an endearing super optimist and you can't see troubles and problems, or you actually had a pretty good time compared to a lot of people. Do you think?
Yeah, I think I did. My childhood was
pretty great.
I've got two brothers and a sister. Like, I look back on it with happy memories on the whole.
Oh, that's excellent. I'm happy for you. So, anything else in your early life particularly stand out that you think that the audience would love to hear about?
I'm sure I've got loads more embarrassing stories. So if there's an opportunity where it fits in, I'll slip it in there.
Bring it back. Yeah, good. Do you still disco dance? Did that carry through?
I still dance. Yeah, I think I should have carried on with the lessons, let's say that. I was at a gig on Saturday, actually, that lasted 7 hours, and I managed to dance through the whole thing. So,
Excellent. Yeah. 7 hours. Like a wedding? When you say gig, it's not like a paid job. You're not a dancer.
It was this concert organized with loads. It was dubbed as like a 90s concert. It was like there was a bit of poetic license. There was like 90s and early noughties.
Yeah, yeah. We let some of them in if they're good.
Yeah, but one of those revival things. So we had like Wigfield and I don't know if you'll have had some of this music over there, like Five and Atomic Kitten, big pop acts.
Yeah, back in the day, yeah. Sydney had a 90s party circuit, the gay party circuit. Was yours a gay one or a regular attendance one?
Yeah, regular attendance.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of gay people there due to the acts.
Right, right. I'm going to talk to you about that shortly because I think of you as that guy. But yeah, we had Pump, the 90s party. It was in circulation for a little while. I think it stopped over coronavirus, but I'm sure it'll come back. It's just, yeah, I don't know. I think both of us are in the right age group to just be like, that was the best era of music and everything about it is great and always will be. And we'll probably be 60 still listening to the same music and 80 and still listening to it.
Definitely. It was amazing. I loved it.
All right. So, as I was just talking about before, I kind of see you as this guy. The stuff you post on Insta, the way you present yourself, the things I know about you, you are very openly, happily gay. But you don't seem to surround yourself with gay stuff. It just kind of happens. Your best friends are girls. You go on fun runs. You go to lots of concerts. You are openly gay in a business where you don't niche down to service gay clients as a life coach. Is that still all correct?
Mainly, my best friends are probably a combination of a couple of girls, a couple of gay guys, and a couple of straight guys. If I was to look at kind of the five or six people that are the closest to me, it's quite a mix. I'm not somebody who chooses to just surround myself with gay guys.
Yeah.
I think I am. Most of what you said was spot on. Being gay is a part of me, as I see it. It doesn't define me. I don't fit into a lot of gay groups, let's say.
That's a own topic that always comes up on this show. Yeah, carry on.
It is, and that's how I like it. I'm very open about being gay. You know, I kind of expect people to just know it without me even telling them to a degree.
Right.
I'm very open about it, very proud of it. But equally, I don't think people know me just because I'm gay. I don't think I need to live up to something because I'm gay.
Mm.
I'm my own person. That's a part of it.
Yeah. I think I'm going to just presume and put it out there that a lot of guys who only have gay friends do it. Well, there's lots of different possible reasons, but some of the time it's just because you just feel more comfort, more safety, less judged. But it doesn't sound like you had a terribly traumatic early life and you didn't feel the need to hide away from society and cower in a place where you could only be loved by people who were the same. That's good. That's good. How's your relationship like with you? Oh, sorry.
Sorry, I was just going to say it is a relief when you, I think kind of going back to being kind of 16, 17, it is nice when you meet other people who are gay.
Yeah.
Then there wasn't a lot of it on TV. I remember. Do you know this TV show EastEnders? Do you get that?
Yeah, I'm familiar. It's a soap opera, right? Drama.
Yeah. I remember there being a first gay kiss on EastEnders, watching it with my family, and my grandparents were there. We were all kind of sat around watching, and there were, people were horrified when that happened. And I remember thinking, oh no, this isn't looking good for me. So I think kind of getting to a point where you realize there are other people in. Well, this is before the internet and everything like that. So going to a gay, where I lived, the town I lived, there was one gay pub, and it was largely much, much older guys that went in there.
Right.
It was like rubbing hands together like there was fresh meat when somebody younger walked in. So it wasn't the best experience, but it was equally nice to know you're not on your own and there are other people. Definitely.
Yeah, and if, you know, if some of those blokes weren't totally thirsty, and, you know, I get it, everyone's a bit thirsty, almost everyone, but, you know, those could have been some really amazing chats if you could have just got to know those guys on a personal level and be like, hey, how are you? Well, you know, what's your life like? Have you always lived around here? What's your experiences like? What would you tell a young man like me? There's so much potential there for an amazing relationship, but I think the sex factor can get in the way a lot of the time.
Yeah, I agree with that. It felt quite intimidating sometimes.
Yeah.
I was determined not to be intimidated. And then I'd kind of venture out to some of the cities nearby and things like that, and I just found a nice vibe. So it was nice being, it was like being a kid in a sweet shop, going to gay clubs for the first time and things like that. It was really, really exciting for me to know that there were people like that. We're so comfortable and so open about it, and guys could kiss it somewhere. And, you know, it was the first time I'd ever seen that happen.
Yeah.
So there was a level of comfort in it, definitely.
Yeah, lovely. Nice. Again, I'm glad for you. You're such a happy, chirpy guy. I love it. You met your first boyfriend quite young, 17, 18. How did you meet?
So he actually wasn't my first one.
Oh, tell us more about that.
The very first one, he was someone who was slightly older, and he worked in a hairdresser's, very, very cliche here, but he worked in a hairdresser's with one of my friends. And my friend, I'd gone in to see my friend for some reason. This friend had not even told her I was gay or thought I was or anything. And she'd happened to mention to me that this guy liked me, liked the look of me when I'd gone in, and he commented on it. And she kind of just very casually passed it on. I decided to take it upon myself to wait for him to come out of work and then chase him across the car park.
How old were you and him?
I was about 16 then. He will have been about 18.
Oh, okay. So really not much gap at all.
No.
Okay, so you chased him across the car park.
Yeah, I chased him across the car park and said, oh, my friend said that you think I'm fit or whatever words that I used at the time.
Yeah.
He thought I'd gone to go and thump him.
Oh,
I mean, I get it, actually. You know, I'm not a violent person, but somebody like running across the car park get alive.
Running on the wings of love across a car park.
When he realized there was no threat, we'd kind of met up and had a few dates and things like that. And I actually didn't pursue things with him because I just decided I wasn't ready to come out, and that was it. So it was a bit later on I met the other one.
Okay. How'd you meet the other one?
Oh, so the other one, I met him through the gay pub that I first started going to. We worked there.
Did you need a fake ID, or did they just kind of let you in those days?
They just let me in.
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying me. I don't think I got special treatment. I think they'd have let anyone in. We didn't need ID to go in there. It was, I think, probably because it was the only gay pub as well. They just wanted to create a really inclusive space for people.
Exactly.
And, yeah, he worked in there. So he was probably about 5 years older than me, that one.
Yeah. It's what was the British show that ran recently? And ultimately, it was quite a sad affair with all the HIV stuff. But it was I thought it was an amazingly well-made gay, queer TV experience. But it was UK-based and it was a bit older, AIDS period. What was it?
Yeah, it's a sin.
It's a sin. Yeah, loved it. Was the gay pub that you had similar to that experience? Because it's like basically a British pub and it makes me recoil a little bit. I have British parents and I still have like feelings, but I don't know, some British things trigger me.
It wasn't really, how can I describe it? It was just a very dark, dingy, seedy place. If I'm being honest,
we love dungeons. I mean, we love a good dungeon.
It wasn't the safest place to go. I remember, like, the second time I went, somebody ripped the sink out of the toilet to throw at someone else.
Great.
So it really wasn't like the nicest environment. But I couldn't stop myself from keep going.
I bet it was magnetic. Yeah, I bet you're like, I've got to know what happens next. I've got to be around this place.
It was exciting.
Yeah,
it was.
There's a certain element, don't you think, of because it's a queer spot, right? If you get a 16, even a 15-year-old, I'm not advocating that 15, 16-year-olds go to pubs or that pubs let them in, but at that time, it makes perfect sense that you would go, this young kid's gay, we've got to let them in because although it's not necessarily that safe in here, everyone needs community. Kids need to be seen and known and understood, and they need belonging and they need community. Yeah, is that how it felt?
Yeah, it did. I regardless of kind of some of the examples I've said, I never particularly felt unsafe. I started to get to know some people in that.
Yeah.
The first few times you go in, you did feel like everybody was staring at you.
I bet 16-year-olds look like babies.
Yeah. And you just felt like everybody was staring at you the whole time you were there. It didn't even go after a few minutes. You'd be like, whatever you were doing, people were staring at you like, who are you? And then people soon get used to you.
Yeah.
And someone else comes along. So
that's cool. Did you get a lot of I remember my early years, I just could not get over the amount of gay staring that was happening that was really different for me. You know that like head down kind of like, do not blink. I'm undressing you with my eyes kind of thing. But like your eyes don't move, so it's even more scary and intimidating and strange. Is there a lot of
that? That's exactly how it was.
The gay stare. It's very real. Yeah. It's very real.
Yeah. Oh, it is very real. And it was kind of split into two halves. There was like a dance floor half. It was only quite a small pub, like a dance floor half and a seated half. And if you went in the seated half where people had their own seat, that element of it was like a very traditional kind of British corner pub where people have their own seat that they're sitting every week and things like that.
Cool. Was there a fire, like an open fireplace?
No, there was no fireplace.
Oh.
No, sadly.
No grandeur. Sticky carpets.
Definitely sticky carpets.
Barely functional toilets.
I'm not going to say what was making them sticky.
Hopefully beer. Yeah, maybe not. Bit of everything. All right, cool. Any other particular things about your early life or early love life or early experiences that you want to share? Because I was thinking about moving on to Korea, unless there is.
No, I don't think so. Let's move on.
Right.
My mind works in a very disjointed way. It doesn't always flow in the right order. So I might jump around, but you'll just have to keep me in control.
Oh, no. Jump around as much as you like. As long as you're having fun and I'm having fun, I know the listeners are going to be having fun too. So go wherever you like. But I will ask you, so you've been coaching for a year or two. I feel like I've known you like 2 years, but my recall and memory is not great. Like, how long have we known each other?
I'm not sure.
18 months?
It probably is around that because when I first started, I kind of used my start date as when I actually left my corporate job. I was actually coaching while I did that, and I'm coming up to the anniversary of me leaving that job.
Okay, cool.
Probably around 18 months or so, I would say.
Okay.
I started kind of building things up a bit before that.
Sure. Well, let's talk about before you found coaching and then how you found coaching and what that meant to you. What did you do before coaching was a thing for you?
I've done everything. I left school. This is where I start jumping around. Left school when I was 16 because I just wanted to leave school. So I remember that all the people that I was friends with at school were all studying to do their A-levels, going to university. I was desperate to earn money, move out, get a job.
Independence, freedom. Yep.
Do my own thing. Yeah. There was nothing career-wise that I had my sights on. I just wanted to earn money, get my own place, start. I thought I was an adult when I was 16. I thought I knew it all. And
how'd it go? What'd you do?
Oh, it's been bumpy. There's been times it went well. There's been times when I've been like landed back to earth with a crash, but you learn from it, don't you?
Yeah.
When I first left school, I just did all sorts of jobs. I worked in shops, restaurants, bars. I did like retail hospitality stuff. When I was 17 and first learned how to drive, I used to drive around the country delivering pharmaceuticals to chemists. I did that for a while.
Cool.
I just tried everything. I worked for a local newspaper selling advertising space. I went into sales. I then went into like HR, then recruitment. I worked in the NHS for a long time, with patient experience and complaints and that sort of thing. And then went into education, doing customer experience, and left the housing sector as director of customer experience when I left. So it's very varied, but there was always kind of probably for the last 10, 15 years of my career, I'd say there was a big focus on helping people. I know that's a very broad statement and a bit of a cheesy one, but that's genuinely what I enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
When I kind of looked at what I wanted to do next, I struggled and I was thinking, what have I enjoyed? I looked back at like some of my last few jobs and thought, which bits of that did I enjoy?
Yeah.
I enjoyed helping people in my teams develop. I enjoyed seeing them get promotions. I enjoyed seeing them get more confident in what they were doing.
Yeah.
And there's been a coaching element of my job for so many years that actually something so obvious, it took me a little while to find.
Right. And so that coaching element, so the word coaching, right, I'm hearing it everywhere these days. Like everyone is saying coach for everything, which is okay. I don't have a problem with that. But when you say there was a coaching element, was it just helping people be good at their job as like a team leader and educator? Or was it literally like you are not your mind and like psychological and, you know, mindset concepts?
Yeah. So, well, when I say probably that's a good prompt for me to clarify what I meant, because when I said there was a coaching element, what I meant was my job wasn't a coach in any of those things. I didn't solely focus my time on coaching.
Yep.
Sometimes it was to get the best out of the people in my team. I manage quite large teams of people sometimes.
Mm.
And it was having like really open, honest conversations with them about actually sometimes just giving people a space to say, I'm really struggling in this job,
yeah,
or I'm not enjoying it. Because a lot of the time when you're employed, people tell you what they think you want to hear. I love it. It's going great.
Yeah.
Everybody's lovely. To be able to speak to your manager and say, actually, I'm really finding this hard, or I'm not enjoying it. It's not what I thought.
Yeah.
Or I've got troubles at home, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I like to think I was always a very approachable person, easy to talk to, and I try and help people and find solutions with them.
Yeah.
And so when I say there's a coaching element, I suppose that's kind of what I was referring to, in terms of kind of helping people through things, sometimes personal things, sometimes career things. And people would often say I was very motivating and uplifting and positive, and naturally that is how I am.
Yeah.
When people
say, I can agree with that.
That is generally my outlook and approach on things.
Yeah.
So if I can share that and make other people feel good or feel uplifted or motivated.
Seems like a win-win, right?
Yeah,
brilliant. So, you know, I know from speaking to a lot of my clients, but also just in corporate life that I used to be in, you know, 3-4 years back now, everyone, it feels like in corporate, true commercial corporate, maybe, you know, I was in an American-led company and then another one that had joined with an American company. So maybe there's some influences there, but everyone's on eggshells. It's all smiles and great and yep, and check out these performance metrics and we're doing so great and I love everything. Everyone thinks they're about to get fired. Everyone thinks they're not good enough, and no one's truly allowed. People don't feel really that they can bring their true selves to work. This is a big condemning statement from me, but I think overall that kind of environment and culture and mindset and headspace predominates the suit and tie working world for sure. Yeah. So the ability to actually be able to say to someone, this is what's actually going on. This is how I actually feel. That is a big deal in those environments.
Oh, it's huge. It's massive. And actually some of the gay guys that I've worked with, it's fascinating to see how they present at work.
Right.
Because I've known gay guys be very uncomfortable with straight guys at work.
Yeah.
They find them intimidating.
Yeah.
They find it more difficult to have conversations and things. I've known gay guys feel like they have to either live up to exactly what everybody expects once they come out as gay at work, or try and compensate for it, which was someone else's words, in terms of he felt like he had to prove himself even more.
Yeah.
Because he was gay. So the
Have you ever felt that?
I'll be honest, I've had a few people try and make me feel like that. I know it's a real thing.
Yeah. I have felt it and a version of it most of my life.
I had a manager years ago when I worked, so this was when I worked for a newspaper selling advertising space. I'm gonna sound like I'm blowing my own trumpet now, Ed, but no, I was
go ahead. Blow loudly and proudly.
I remember they used to do salesperson of the month and salesperson of the year.
Yeah.
And on particular year, I won salesperson of the month 11 times out of 12.
Hell yeah.
I missed it one month because I was on holiday for 2 weeks. and I was hated in there because of what I was doing. And I knew that's what it was. You know, I know it sounds very easy to say people are jealous, but I knew people were frustrated with me at some of the success I was having. And my manager used to call me Mr. Watch You Back to colleagues.
Well, just like the gay guys reflecting on straight guys and feeling uncomfortable and less than and then compensating, everyone who's not selling as well as you are, and sales teams can be very intense in that way. There's a clear leaderboard and a ranking system. A lot of them will look at you and feel less than and inferior and need to compensate. So it's not that you did anything wrong.
Yeah.
It's that they're upset with themselves at you.
Yeah. Well, they were. And he was, he in particular really sticks in my mind because I irritated him. Like the sight of me irritated him.
Yeah.
And he hated my laugh.
It's tough being this good.
Some of the comments he made were just so inappropriate, so unprofessional,
right.
And he had a personal problem with me.
Yeah.
And he should have done because I was making him loads of money.
I bet you, Alan, he had a personal problem with himself.
Definitely.
And he made it your problem.
Yeah. When I look back on it now, I can see that.
Yeah.
In the moment, that wasn't where my head went to at all. I was just like, why is he making my life a misery? Because he really tried to. And I was determined not to let him get the better of me, was how I saw it.
Yeah. And so you just kept going and kept doubling down on your high numbers and your polished boots and your on-time schedule. Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha.
I just kept doing more of the same.
Probably pissed him off even more.
I did report him for his behavior in the end, but it didn't really go anywhere. Because it couldn't be proved.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. All right. I was in sales for some time as well, and I performed quite highly. Yeah, helping people. I remember being in year eight, so we just entered high school, and they're like, okay, everyone, let's make a giant sheet of what you like and don't like and capture a snapshot of you, and then we'll bury it, and then we'll give it back to you when you graduate, and we'll do a time capsule. So we did. I remember sitting there intently going through the questions, being like, this is really fun. Like, I love this concept. Who will I be in 5 years? And who am I now? And how can I transport that through time? So, of course, it's all the standard questions, including who do you like? And I think I've said it on this show before, Rebecca. Shout out, Rebecca. I still like you, but we're not in touch at all. One day she'll hear this. And then it goes, what do you want to do when you're older? And I really, really, really sat with that question. And eventually I wrote, I want to help people. And I know, and I can still feel and remember how I felt, or at least I think I do, that it was like kind of like psychology, but I didn't really want to be a psychologist that I understood. And of course, I'd been sent to the child psychologist a couple of times because I was both a bully and bullied at different times because of, I don't know, being me, which isn't all just being gay, but being all of me. And yeah, didn't love him, didn't want to be that. But that sense of wanting to help people was very powerful in me. And that reminded me of that when you said the same thing just now. I think everybody gets joy and gets that positive feeling out of helping people. So literally every job that brings any kind of value, you can look at that in such a way then say, this helps people. Hopefully you can. Because I do have clients and I meet people and they're like, once I realized, like, well, it's simultaneous. Once you realize your job doesn't really mean anything, do anything, go anywhere, help anybody, it's torture. It is torture.
Yeah. Realization hit me hard. And it was torture. I remember kind of going into a bit of a spiral of, why am I doing this? I don't care about it. We're not doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
All sorts of things. Which made me suddenly, I'd got a bit of a plan going in terms of starting coaching, building it up before I left.
Yep.
I left quite suddenly after just having this realization, like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's torturous. And, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that are like, we do it for the profits and the profits are for the good. But if that really is all that you've got left, I think anyone roughly our age is going to check out real fast.
How old were you when you had that, when you made that statement that you want to tell people? How old were you at that time?
13.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, I guess it is.
It really is. Like when I was 15, 16 at school and they was asking me what I wanted to do when I was older, I'd scribble something down because everybody else was going around saying teacher, doctor, etc. I was like, better think of something quick.
I want to be the next Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
No, I felt it very deeply. I was a deep feeler. My mum helped me all throughout my young years to communicate. Maybe it's inherent in me as well, but I do have to thank my mum for a lot of things in terms of real talk and processing emotions and openness in that sense. Then the gay stuff really fucked me over. But obviously now is my superpower. But yeah, I just remember thinking the activity that I really want to do in my life boils down to helping people. And it did, and it still does. So yeah, maybe it's profound. But I don't think I was, well, the test suggests that I'm above average intelligence, but I don't really care about that. What I'm saying is I don't think I was a particularly special or like in any way terribly unique child or even adult today, but I am me. I won't apologize for that. And yeah, I still want to help people. And I do think that I suit this job very well because I like going through the motions of turning into words the things that we're going through. Same with you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I wish I had the insight at 13 to say something like that and the courage to say it because I just felt panicked.
I felt sheepish. No one was looking at that, which is why I wrote Rebecca and why I wrote help people, because you got to put it in a letter and bury it straight away. It was to you, for you, and no one read it. I don't think I would have said that out loud.
Strangely, it was in a geography class that we had to do it, and I can't quite remember the link, but I remember going round. We all used to have to sit in alphabetical order, and going round, and everybody was teacher, vet, doctor.
Right.
These great jobs. And I was like thinking at the time, I'd be quite happy working on the music counter at Woolworths or H&B or something. That was quite fun.
Yeah.
Because I just had no idea. I really had no idea at school what I wanted to do. Academically, I was naturally okay at most things. I got good grades and things like that, but I wouldn't say academia is my strong point.
Yeah.
Emotional intelligence, reading people, that sort of thing is where I look. You know, maybe I should have gone in psychology or something because I find it fascinating.
Well, you kind of have now, kind of. You know, I should do a whole episode with someone on the line between counselor, psychologist. I should get a psychologist on and then talk to them about the differences. That would be excellent. Yeah, that would be really, really good. Thank you for that idea. The other thing I wanted to say was that me and you were jamming and vibing on so young and fresh and hip on overlaying our truth and our like natural propensity for different skills and talents and capacities onto our deeply held passion for helping people. And so I want to say that to the audience listening out. I'm sure there's people listening right now that are like, I don't love my job, but I don't know what to do. I don't know how to make that work. Well, feel for what you really, really care about by finding stillness. Really find that, even if it's as nebulous as helping people or plants or animals. It can be very nebulous. Yeah. That's okay. Then have a quick look around for not just like the technical skills that you have. Oh, I can code in Python. Oh, my mum taught me how to sew. Like, don't be that specific. Look at your general characteristics of self and what kind of areas you like to work in, whether it's like talking or manual labor or being outside or being in an office or spreadsheets or whatever you have seem to have a natural propensity for. Smash those two together and rub them around for long enough and Google about it and explore that. I'm sure you'll find a little thread to pull on to find work that you're going to find more fulfilling. You might even, and this was my experience, stumble across something you didn't know existed and go, oh, holy shit, that's exactly what I want to do.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. Do you know a lot of people, I think, do know what they might not know specifically what they want to do, but they have an idea and they've buried it.
Yep. Like,
they've spoken about it for so long or not felt it's possible that it's buried somewhere and you've got to dig deep and find it. And I think the other, it's something, you know, I hear a lot of people striving towards the salary and things like that. And you've really got to kind of ask yourself what's important to you in terms of,
These supposed to, right? There's so many jobs we're not supposed to do. Men working in kindergartens, you know, jobs that don't lead to a high salary, jobs where you don't wear a suit. The whole fucking culture and society is like pressuring everyone to go to university. You already apologize for leaving school early. Like, that's a thing that lives with us, this shame, because we didn't we know exactly what we're supposed to do. We know what the high status, high esteem, apparently desirable jobs are. But, you know, if you end up a dentist, a lawyer, an engineer, and you fucking hate it, you're going to be terrible at it and your life is going to be shit.
It's interesting. You've just said that. I apologize for it because, you know, I did end up going to university in my early 30s. I was supported through employment to go and do a degree and things. And I think I'd always felt I was on the back foot because I worked in it. So the environment I worked in, officially speaking, you were meant to have a degree to work at the level I was working.
Right.
So I was capped basically until I did it.
Mm.
And they, you know, very kind of them, they supported me to go and do a degree and things like that. I absolutely hated it. I hated the study. I didn't find it interesting.
Oh, dear.
But I did it. And then I did my master's and arguably it hasn't served me. So I think it's very easy to get, you can get very focused on something that you then start to feel you've spent a lot of time doing and you can't backtrack.
Yep.
Or you go after the wrong things.
The ladders, right? You climb a ladder so high that you can't see the ground anymore and you're like, actually, I don't fucking like this ladder, but it's too far down and I can't climb down. I can't imagine I need to be high on a ladder. All these beliefs and assumptions and ideas swirling around us that are very ingrained at every level. Funny that they cap people at that workplace. Were you capable of your job? Were you good at it? You don't have a degree. Okay. So suddenly you're not good enough. We need to hold you down. That's fucked. That's just crazy. If you weren't capable of the job or you needed a skill, okay, but it doesn't sound like that was the case.
You're bringing memories back to me, Edward, this, because this was in the NHS, and I remember I was at I don't know if it was a conference or something, and of the NHS, I can remember this lady saying to me, are you a doctor? And I obviously wasn't. And then she asked me if I was a nurse, and I said no. And then she asked me if I was a physio, and I was like, no. And she went, what are you then?
Yeah.
And I'm nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm nothing, but I'm everything. I'm very good at my job.
Yeah, I didn't mean I was nothing. I've never thought of myself as nothing, but yeah. I was none of the things that she'd have connected with. So I was just trying to kind of say I'm none of the things that are on your list.
Yeah.
Every now and again,
I get a DM on Insta where someone's like, do you have a degree or any education in, you know, counseling or psychology? And one guy said recently social sciences. I've stopped replying because my coaching credentials are findable. If you go through my content, you will know me. You will understand what I'm capable of. People who are asking for these credentials, they're not asking for the credentials. Most of the time, they're looking to disprove the fact that you can help them because you don't have a certain qualification or degree. And they don't believe that anyone else can do anything else. It's just another perpetuation of this same thing. Yeah. You can't do a highly paid job or be amazing at anything unless you are, you know, you've been drilled at university for 4 years. But I got to say, though, I loved university, but I did a general humanities degree and I got to learn about the EU in great detail and the political functioning of it. Sorry, maybe that's a trigger word for you these days, don't know. it is for me. Fucking hell. I've got a British passport. Robbed. Also Indigenous Americans and First Nations people, and like quite in depth about all of that. I did Pacific War, Japan, America, and as part of World War II. Heaps of well-rounded stuff that actually taught me heaps of life stuff. I didn't get jammed into some skills-based pathway. I didn't jam myself into one. Actually, it was absolutely wonderful. If everyone's affluent enough and everyone can have that, and everyone who wants it, I'd hope to be able to give that to them. Yeah, quick tangent, but yeah, I like talking about me. So
I think part of my not enjoying it, because there were some lovely people that were on my course, but I was trying to do it with a full-time job and having a life.
That's
and everything
really
else.
Hard.
It was tough going, and I didn't pick the topic. I did my degree on management and leadership.
Yep.
And then I also did my master's in that as well. So I had 5 solid years of studying management and leadership, going over academic models and things like that. And it was just...
Yeah, that shit is dry. It is super dry.
Yeah, very.
So I'm wondering about where to go next. We've got options. We've got current life / love life, which is always interesting. Or hobbies, which is also interesting, but we'll probably do that quickly. Or we can venture into the world of gay men and what's up with us, and whether that's related to work or personal life, I don't mind. How do you feel?
Oh, I liked the sound of the first one. What was it?
Current life / love life. All right, let's do it. Let's talk about you as a man and as a gay man, mummy. Where's your current life at? Do you consider your life to be 10 out of 10?
No, but do you know what? I don't think it ever will be for me because, I feel like I'm using a lot of cliches and I don't tend to think of myself as someone that does that, but I always think something can be better. I'm that person that, like, on a survey when you're asked to score something out of 10,
yeah,
will never give 10.
Okay, so you always give yourself a 9?
I would give myself... very solid 9.
Okay, so it sounds like it's your version of a 10. But
yeah,
I'll hear you out.
Do you know what? I think it depends which way you look at it. If I look, do I think there's anything missing? Absolutely not. So maybe it should be a 10. If I look to think, could it be a little bit better? Then I think, yeah, things could always be a bit better. So
okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Yeah. It seems like you take a very healthy approach to this. A lot of my time is spent helping people realize just how much they already have, just how incredible yeah. they already are, just how fucking amazing life and existence itself is right now. And yet we're so worried about all the problems and making everything better. So my like initial knee-jerk reaction is like, oh no, is he striving to fix everything? What's wrong? But it doesn't sound like that's the approach you're having. What's your making everything better? How can everything be better? What? Tell me about that.
Well, it's good to probe into it because I just, with everything I do, I always think there should be room for improvement. You've got to, I like working towards things. Mm. I like having goals. I like having something to work towards. And I think you have to kind of enjoy the journey towards something as much as you enjoy the result. I've had times where yes. I've worked towards something and been disappointed by it because actually working towards it was more fun than actually having it.
I'm of the opinion that that is always true. I think about life as a continuum for a second. Where are you supposed to arrive that gives you happiness, joy, peace, contentment, confidence, love, chocolate, and like people fanning you with leaves? Where are we supposed to arrive where we're done?
Yeah.
There's no such place.
You ever done?
No. As soon as you stop, it sucks.
Yeah. What you want changes as well. You know, people that know me well know I change my mind often with it. I'll get one thing and then I want to start working towards something else. And do you know what? I used to think that was a problem. I like it about myself. I like that I do that. I don't want to change it.
I think this drive to always be growing, adding, completing, doing that. Yeah. This is really the 9/10 thing that we're going through. I would definitely categorize you as a 10 because you're in that place where you are looking for your true feelings about what you really want, how you really want to do it, and what really matters to you, and then going ahead and doing that. If you're, that is the destination. If you're looking for a destination, dear listener, that's it. Be able to know what you want and where you really want to go and what really matters to you and be in motion in that. One step at a time. You don't have to know where it ends. You do not have to arrive. The process itself is the place where you can experience joy, fulfillment, contentment, meaning, you know, struggle, striving, learning, growing, hardship, all of it. It's all in the process. If you're looking forward to arriving somewhere, you're not going to.
Yeah. I love being challenged. And I think I've spoken to a lot of people who feel guilty, actually, that they'll say, I shouldn't be feeling frustrated. I shouldn't be feeling unfulfilled because I've got this, this, that. They almost feel guilty about those feelings attached to it. And a lot of the time, I think it's just because they've put an expectation on something that they're working towards and missed all the fun part. But for me, there's always, I am really happy, really, really happy. There's probably the happiest I've ever been. But there's always things I want to work towards.
Are you making it work financially? Are you both safe and becoming powerful?
Oh, I don't know about powerful.
Money can be power, right?
Oh, it can. And you know, when I went self-employed, I remember my dad saying to me, his words were, what the fuck are you leaving your job for if you're going to earn less money? I don't get you, lad.
Yeah, it's you.
You know, that was his, and I was like, you just do not get this. Because I knew I was going to, look, I was on a great salary.
Yeah.
But it wasn't making me very happy. I was chained to my computer all day. I was miserable. I wanted kind of some freedom in my day. I love the gym. I love running. I wanted to be able to do those things when I wanted to do them. I just wanted a better balance. I wanted to feel that I was in control of my own day. I wanted to kind of cut out a lot of the nonsense that was absorbing my day and focus it on helping people. And I get to do that. I feel very fortunate. But when I say fortunate, I've also made it happen myself as well. So I'm proud of myself.
Yay.
I made it. It hasn't just happened by chance.
Is your calendar full right now? I'm kind of hoping you'll say no. Oh, as full as you want it to be.
It's as full as I want it to be right now. And I'll back that up by saying that, yes, I could take on more people, but what I've recognised is when I do that, I'm not getting the time creatively to kind of work on the steps of things that I want to do. So
I run at about half. If I have 3 to 4 clients a day, it's enough money for me, and it allows me to make the book that I've been working on, this podcast that I've been working on, and these things bring me a lot of joy, a lot of pleasure, and to keep building. And I can go back and look at coaching and how I do that, how I deliver that, what I might change. Yeah, is that what you're doing as well?
I am very guilty of overcommitting myself.
Okay,
I'm like, this sounds fun. This sounds fun. I want to do this. I want to do this, and so where it is at the minute, if I could take on more clients, and you get that natural, you know, I lost a couple of clients the other week. I've taken on some new ones in the last week or so. There's a natural.
Yeah, it's always moving,
I'm kind of still learning in terms of how long people will be here and recognising the signs that are coming to the end and that sort of thing.
But,
it's nice that... At the minute, I've got a really nice balance of I've got good clients financially. I'm good.
Yeah.
But I've
and your life's 10 out of 10.
I'm learning like photography at the minute. I've got an interest in. I've just bought a DSLR camera because I've never really been able to use one.
Yeah.
And I really want to know. So I'm doing courses and things on that. But that's just a passion project. It's something I enjoy. Part of this for me was having the time to do all the things that I didn't get time to do before.
When you were climbing ladders and ladders that you didn't necessarily even like. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Hey, tell us about coaching for confidence. This is an ad because you're a beautiful person, and if people want to work with you, it's Alan Smith. I mean, just quickly, where can they find you?
Yeah, so I probably do need to change my Instagram handle because it's got loads of dots and underscores and stuff in it. But if people put the Freedom Coach in, they'll probably find me. It is the first one that comes up.
Okay. Are you Googleable? Do you have a website?
I am. Yeah. Thefreedomcoach.co.uk is my website. Thank you, Ed.
No,
I forget to put
No problem. But the thing is, I'm interested in driving people to your coaching service because it's valuable. But now I want you to tell us, why is it valuable? What do people come to you for? Why do they care? How do you help them? And what happens?
Yeah. So I was encouraged when I started. I know a lot of coaches niche and work with kind of particular audiences and things like that. And I, in typical Alan style, rebelled against that and thought, I don't know who it is yet. I'm just going to keep going and see what happens, which was probably a bit of a risky strategy. But what I found was a lot of the underpinning kind of what was holding people back was a lack of confidence in themselves and their ability. So there is
self-esteem. Some of the
self-esteem, definitely.
They're wrapped up, aren't they?
Yeah, and it often happens over a long time. It's not easy to suddenly be confident. And actually, I don't think most people are either confident or not confident. I think you're confident in things you're comfortable with and around people that you're comfortable with, and you're not confident in certain situations. Some people are able to present themselves more confidently in unfamiliar territory than others.
But that confidence, or is that just, I'm good at performing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That goes back to kind of why, when people interview for jobs, it's the person who delivers a confident job interview often that gets it. But I think I've worked with a lady recently who she'd been stuck in the same job for years because it was comfortable. People don't always want to come out of their comfort zone. It's comfortable there.
Yep.
So it's about kind of really helping people recognize what it is they want. And a lot of people start with what they don't want. They find it easy to say what they're not happy with than what it is that they want to go towards.
So how does somebody do that? How does somebody find what they want? Or how do you help them?
A lot of the time, sometimes I'll speak to people and it they have to trust me. They have to build a relationship with me to a degree, as I'm sure yours do with you. I think it's important. And I, whenever I have consultations with clients, I always say, don't expect you to trust me today because it's the first time you've met me.
But yeah, you kind of shouldn't
feel like I'm somebody that you're going to be able to build some kind of rapport with that you can talk openly to.
Yeah.
That you can say, you know, I want to create a safe space for people that they can say whatever they want without feeling judged. And actually, even just sometimes people will say to me, that's the first time I've said that out loud and it feels really good.
Yeah.
Because those things are there.
Yeah.
You know, what was alluded to earlier. Those things are buried deep down. They feel silly. They feel embarrassed. The people around them, they don't think will be very supportive or think it's a very good idea.
Mm.
I am all about following your heart, trusting your gut, going after the things that you want, and sometimes making plans to make that happen. I understand not everybody can just leave a well-paid job. People have got commitments and things like that.
Mm.
It's about forming plans and strategies in terms of how you know, if you don't change anything, it's going to stay exactly the same. So the only way to do that is to start thinking about small steps. And what I often find is I am kind of pacing people a bit slower than they want to go because I see a natural curve whereby people suddenly realize what they want. Then they want to go after it at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I know that that's not sustainable. I know that's why a lot of things kind of fail because people go at a pace and then lose momentum. So it's about kind of the accountability, the support, the challenge, the openness,
the space.
And I think I am
the trust.
More excited about them achieving things than they are.
Cool. So you're a cheerleader and a coach.
Definitely.
Yeah, good. It sounds to me like people are welcome to enter a space where they can say whatever they want when they feel comfortable to explore why they don't have what they want and given the opportunity with you to explore what they really want and you're like, no judgment, I just want to know your truth. They find their way to doing that, and by saying things like follow your heart, you're leading them to that place that I think we both know is not the mind where our beliefs and ideas about what should and shouldn't be, should get this job, should have this career, shouldn't leave it after this long. They're all beliefs and ideas. They're not reality. We're inflicting them on ourselves. What's wrong with just what your heart wants? Do you want to go and murder everybody? I doubt it. Do you want to help people and love and connect and express and grow and provide? Yeah. And not just you, but literally everybody, unless we have dumb shit in our heads that tells us that we are wrong, we're not right, we're not good enough, and we need to be different.
Yeah. And the word should is one of the things I listen out for because as soon as start saying, I should be doing this, I should be doing that, it's so interesting that kind of the expectations of everybody else is so ingrained in them. And, you know, sometimes I kind of think people are concerned about their status or how other people are looking.
Perceive them. Yeah.
How often do you know what your mate's salary is? Like, they're so worried about dropping salary a little bit because it won't look very good. And I think, well, do they even know what you're earning now? I don't know what my friends earn. It's not something I ask, they don't know what I earn.
Mm.
But people hold on to all these kind of things that think make them who they are and give them this status in life or give them this position in their group or whatever. It's a real shame.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish people would just look inside and ask themselves, what do I really want? What really matters to me? And why am I not important enough to prioritize that? That's some deep shit. Because we've been on shoulds and shouldn'ts. Can we go back to the straight men syndrome of like gay men? So you personally haven't felt this, but I think it would be doing an injustice to the listeners if we didn't address this because we've there's so many good things we have just addressed, which I'm sure everybody's interested in. But I know for a fact that there's a ton of gay dudes out there in offices, in life generally as well, but predominantly the work office. You know, one client came to me and this was his big, big thing. He's like, Ed, I have no confidence. I struggle with self-esteem. I'm always comparing myself. I never think I'll be good enough for all of these guys. Help me fix all of that. And I'm like, do you like your job? He's like, no. I was like, okay, so why do you care? So there's kind of two issues.
Yeah.
But don't you think that if you are reacting to straight guys generally, that it's not the straight guys are doing anything to you in particular. You are bouncing off of them and getting upset with yourself. Because if it's every straight guy, there's nothing that they're doing other than just existing. And you're looking at it and going, oh, that means that about me. Or there is a lot of like quote unquote alphas, and let's also call them douches. Alpha douches. A real alpha like would be quiet and quietly confident and comfortable within himself and doesn't need to splash his bravado everywhere. Ooh, very graphic. But alpha douches.
I like the alpha douches. I'm going to use
splashing
that.
Everywhere. Yeah. These guys that talk loud, dominate meetings, get their way, talk, you know, over women, mansplain, we see them now and again, and we see little bits of it, I think, all the time. And I think we give it a lot of permission. But I don't – the way I see it now is that these guys are also compensating for their own perceived lack of enough manliness, enough control, enough power, because they've been told a good man has those things, a powerful man is good, these things are what men should do. And again, we're all the way back into beliefs and all this bullshit that we just make up and swallow as part of culture. But we don't have to. So if you're in a meeting room with three straight guys and two girls and you find yourself unable to speak your mind clearly and have yourself be heard and take up space, what do you think is going on? How would you help someone with that situation?
You've asked one of the questions that I would, because I think it's a very common issue with gay guys to feel intimidated by straight guys, particularly in the workplace. And I think going back to kind of some of the things you said previously, there is a tendency to feel more comfortable around people who you see yourself in or you see those similarities. So it's
frequently gay guys and women, right? For a lot of gay guys, it is. For me, I love almost all straight men. Well, a lot of straight men I get on very well with. But, I also get the wash over of comfort when it's just gay dudes. I'm like, oh, there really can't be really any justifiable judgment here because we're all gay.
A lot of time, I think, is the judgment even actually there?
Correct.
Or is it feeling?
It is. But it's probably not coming from the straight guys.
Yeah, exactly.
It's coming from you.
Yeah. It does. I see that quite a lot, that it comes that there's an expectation that they're going to be judging you and feeling that way towards you. And it's actually there. And you know what? You're not going to get on with everybody. You're not going to like everybody. You're not going to respect everybody. But like and respect yourself enough to kind of in that situation, continue to be you. And I think that's where frustration start to build, because those unsaid things or agreeing to do things or whatever that situation's turned into for you, as you're coming out of that room because you felt intimidated, then just manifests as it goes on outside of them. And a lot of the time, there are some kind of difficult characters. There are some women who try to be very intimidating,
as well as
men. And, you know, that's another fascinating debate that you can look into in terms of why does that happen? And they're trying to compensate.
Same thing. Same thing. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. I'm sure of it.
I am too. But I think it comes from inside. And if you can be yourself, and there's things you can do to help with that, if you can do that, you'll come out of that situation feeling much more comfortable than if you let your perceived intimidation get the better of you.
Yeah. I want to say we're all taught that our truth is wrong from a very early age, and that has universal and lasting consequences. However, we must unlearn these lies. There's nothing wrong with being gay. There's nothing wrong with being feminine. There's nothing bad about any of that, unless you believe that it is. But we are all taught to believe this and expected to believe this, except it is changing and a lot of people are being given space and time and power to exist. If you can work on you and do all of that while simultaneously assessing, is my workplace just supporting this? Is it rewarding, domineering, loud people? Is this the way a workplace gets the best result from its people and its staff? Is this the right place for me to be working? Do I want to change it, accept it, or leave it? They're all valid options. You got to find your answer.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. You've always got a choice.
Because you probably are blowing yourself up with the idea that you're not aggressive enough, that your girly gay voice, because gay voice is a real thing, just like the gay stare is a real thing. If you think that's wrong and bad and a problem and gives you away and reveals your weakness and that's compromising your career, I'm certain that you're wrapped up in a set of beliefs that says straight is good, gay is bad, and that is the stem of everything that is blowing you up about that meeting. If you could just love yourself, and I know that that's a big ask and it takes time and it takes work, yes, absolutely. But if you were currently self-loving and you didn't apologize for your own existence and you said, here's what I have to offer, here's who I am, here's what I've got, without domineering anybody, you would be heard in the meeting, unless they're a bunch of cunts and it's a shit culture, and then you've got a choice. Try to change it, because you want to take that on, or quit, because it's not your responsibility to change everyone in the entire world. That is unreasonable for any individual to be expected to do all of that.
Comes back to that, and I see this in a lot of gay guys, the desire to fit in and be liked.
Yeah.
People want to fit in and be liked. And I guess that's probably a natural thing, but you if you put yourself out there, you naturally find the people who gravitate to what you find, the right ones. I believe that.
Yeah. I agree. And this happens in gay bars all the time. So it's not just the straight guys in the boardroom. It is the gay guys in the gay bar and on the apps. Yes, we all want to be liked. And there's that human level of that, because we want connection. We want love. Mm-hmm. We want play. We want trust. We want silliness. We want safety.
And acceptance for some people.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. But we gay men, generally speaking, are at a massive deficit, because we were taught how to dislike ourselves, taught how to hide ourselves, taught how to smother ourselves and push it all away, because it's wrong, it's bad. Coming back to us takes some time and some effort. I don't want to say a mountain of time or effort, because then you're just believing something again. Let it take as long as it needs to, and let it be as hard as it is. But stick with this. Am I wrong? Is me wrong? When did I sign a deal with the devil? When did I want to murder everybody? No, there's nothing wrong with you. There just isn't. Yeah. Unless you believe that there is. And if you have a tendency to do like dangerous behaviors, this is the caveat. Say you've got a fetish, like, I don't know, I really love tying people up and being an alpha dominant, like, power wielder. Yeah, you can see your truth, know that that excites you, accept that, still be self-loving, and still not go ahead and hurt anybody. You know the difference between hurting and not hurting somebody. So you can get consent, you can manage your desires, you can take care of things in an appropriate way, and seamlessly still fit in with society, accept yourself, and even with the right people at the right times, if it's something awkward, like I love paddling dudes 24 hours a day and I need to own slaves. Like, if that's your truth, there are people that you can reveal that to and be yourself around, but you've just got to be careful and appropriate about how you go about owning your truth and living your life. So I think that includes everybody. If you genuinely want to murder people, I think perhaps the best place for you is a psychiatric, medical facility where you can be assisted to manage your dangerous desires. I've yet to meet a murderer. Have you ever met a murderer? I haven't met one. So.
Not that I know of.
God, that would be hard.
If I do know any, they haven't disclosed that to me that's their intention. So I'll say hopefully not.
All right, now that we've covered murder, I think we're all the way through the list. I feel comfortable roughly wrapping things up. How do you feel? Is anything else, any major topics, areas of interest?
I feel like we've covered quite a few. We've covered quite a bit there, I think, haven't we? There's nothing I feel is missing. I could quite easily talk to you all night, Ed, or morning.
You too, Alan. We shouldn't live on opposite ends of the world. Can you come move to Melbourne? I'm moving in 2 days. Can you come hang out and live with me?
I do need to come over to Melbourne. You know how much I love it there.
Yeah, come on down. All right, so I've got some zany questions for you.
Oh, hit me.
You got to try and answer them fast without thinking, but don't worry. We'll edit things if it gets hectic.
I'll do my best.
Hotels or Airbnb?
Oh, Airbnb, I'm going to say.
Okay. When did you last poo?
This morning.
All right. If you could change your name, would you? And what would you pick?
Oh, I'd definitely change it.
Oh, really?
Liked it. Yeah, Alan. I'd love to change it.
Alan.
My mum knows it. I've never liked being called Alan. I've told her it's the most stupid name since I was about 20. Four. People have thought I'm going to be like a 55-year-old man because it's just such an old name. Okay? As I get older, I'm not like the, when people stop being surprised that I'm younger than they expected, then that's when I know I look old.
Oh, God. Okay. Yep. Do you know what you'd change it to, or you just know you don't like Alan?
Oh, no, I don't like Alan or Smith. I'd change both bits.
Smith's pretty boring.
Yeah, very boring.
I mean, well, Wilson, though, is that terribly interesting?
It's more interesting than Smith.
Yeah, but as an Alan Smith, can't you like blend seamlessly into the world and become even more invisible? There's a certain thing, like people want to be important and status and stuff.
Invisible.
Right, but if you think about it, isn't it an absolute blessing that you're just a guy? And you can basically, because we're affluent, you know, first world, we happen to also be white, like we've got a lot of privilege and power, yeah? You can go anywhere and be anyone and do anything. You're basically invisible. Yeah. It's actually incredible.
It is, but I could be incredible with a better name. I don't
think. Aberforth. No, too old.
Maybe we need to do a competition for people to suggest
name
a
Alan.
Name.
Yeah.
And then I'll change it.
Let's do it. Are cartoons just for kids?
No.
No? Do you love any cartoons in particular?
No, not in particular, but I do enjoy watching them still. There isn't like ones that I go to, but they're definitely not just for kids.
Okay. Do you have
them away from kids?
Do you have any dating disaster stories?
Loads of them.
Oh, are any of them quite funny and insightful and provocative?
Oh.
I'll tell you one quickly while you think.
Go on.
I went on a date with this guy. Well, it was a Grindr hookup that I turned into a date because I told him on Grindr, I'm like, dude, we got to talk. I have to like know you and like you. I don't just want to do the hookup thing. He's like, no, that's great. That's what I want. I was like, okay, cool. So we go to McDonald's, get McFlurries, sit in the car park, chatting. I thought it was very casual, very cool. He's awful. I really didn't like him at all. He actually also smelled faintly of cabbage. He just was just bitter and yucky. So anyway, I was like, hey, look, do you mind if I just take you home back to the train station? He's like, oh, we're not going to go back to your place. I was like, I'm just not really feeling it. He's like, oh, great. That's great for my ego. Yeah, thanks. And wow. I was like, should we go now? Take him back to the train station so he could go home. Fuck, it was awful. It was awful. And I was like, ugh. My heart was bleeding for the guy, but he can't put it back on me. If you don't want to have sex with somebody, you don't have to have sex with somebody. I didn't owe him anything. Ugh. Yeah. Anyway, we were quite young, like 20.
Oh, I still have disastrous dates now at 42.
What happens? Tell me.
Oh, there was one where my behavior was quite bad and one where theirs was. Mine was, I'd gone to a restaurant with this guy I'm vegetarian. So he picked a vegetarian restaurant for us to go to.
That's nice.
Which I never want people to, it's very lovely, but I never want people to have to do it because I can find something to eat anywhere.
Right.
Anyway, this restaurant that he'd picked to go, so I couldn't decide what I wanted between two things. So he was very lovely, this guy. I picked my thing. He picked my second choice so that if I didn't want what I had, he I could have his. I ended up just eating like all of my meal and half of his because it was so nice.
So good.
Came away thinking, Haley wasn't great on that.
Oh, but that could be really cute. Was he upset about it?
No, do you know what? Actually,
if I saw someone enjoying their food that much on my date, I'd be like, this is going amazingly. I'm so happy.
His date was the best first date he's ever had.
Yeah. Also, your bad behavior turns out to be great. Typical.
Yeah, we didn't get past the second date though, so it maybe wasn't that good.
Okay, well, no, if you're not a match, you can still have a hilariously awesome great date, but the truth is you're still just not a match. So no matter how many great dates you have, you're still not going to be a match.
And do you know what? I do look at it like that with dating. I think a lot of the time it's just meeting someone new. And I'm not somebody who gets nervous going on dates and things because I think it's just like meeting someone new and seeing yep. how you get on.
Eventually, it's just a numbers game because there's only so many matches for you out there.
Yeah. I might have worked my way through them. But
have you got to about 100 dates?
No, I don't count. Right. I've not been on that many recently, I've got to say. But the other one that I was going to tell you was... I went for dinner with, so this guy that was, he was coming over, he lived in Liverpool,
yep.
I live in Manchester. He came over here for dinner. I crashed my car just before
Great.
He arrived, so I had all that to deal with. I was about an hour late. then over dinner, he spent probably the best part of an hour and a half telling me what colour his aura is and how rare that is and what that meant about him. As a person, now I'm not, you know, if people are interested in that, I'm not dissing it, but it's not something I know a great deal about.
No. No matter what your interest is, if you swamp somebody else with it, you're not a good dater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great date. He then ended up coming back to mine, my bad.
You felt like you should have said no in hindsight?
It was do you know? I felt like I was on the back foot because I was an hour late and there'd been a series of things.
Oh, you owed him something.
And it was genuinely for a drink, which like I realise how naive that sounds when I say it, but my intentions were to go no beyond that.
Right.
And then he decided to tell me he was taking his jeans off because his dick was digging in him.
Yeah.
So at that point, I asked him to leave.
Oh, that can totally happen. That's not a ruse for anything. I take my jeans off randomly all the time because, you know, my dick's uncomfortable.
Yeah, when you go around to people's houses, you just take them off because your dick stops digging. Yeah, fine. So that wasn't the best.
Okay, so no sex that night?
No.
All right. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it. Loincloths or Speedos?
Ooh. Do you know what? I'm going to say loincloths just because I'm not a fan of Speedos.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool. Yep. Half the audience just hates you now.
I know. The half that didn't already.
Are gay men too serious or not serious enough?
I would say too serious a lot of the time.
Okay.
From the ones I encounter.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got good reason to be, but. It's not nice, is it?
No.
We're kind of sort of known as being loose, but I think we all know that the looseness comes from this like, I prefer oblivion to reality. Just want to get fucked up. And then we get serious the rest of the time. Candles, yay or nay?
Oh, yeah, I like candles.
Yeah, toot it, don't boot it, candles.
Yeah, fan of candles.
Would you marry a bisexual man?
Yeah. Well, that's a big question because I've been married before.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure marriage is necessarily on the cards the second time round, but I wouldn't completely rule it out.
You'd commit to a bisexual life partner, but
yes,
not marry?
My hesitation was more around the marriage than the bisexual.
Yeah. Cool. Love it. Do you have a favorite Disney film?
Oh, I'm sure I do because I like quite a few of them, but I'm just trying to think of one. What would it be?
You can't love them that much. I feel like if you haven't found
it
yet.
I like a lot of different films, and I'm just trying to find. No,
your answer is Disney. I love Disney.
Yeah, if I haven't got one that.
Yeah, if it's not popping out at you. All right. No, well, I guess that's going to have to be your answer. Disappointing, and I guess you're kind of wrong, but there's not much we can do about that.
I'm wrong.
Yeah. do you have a favorite gay film?
When you say gay film, like...
Do you know how they're all terrible? Or like almost all of them are terrible? Any of those? Do you ever watch gay films?
You know what? I did love Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, I did too. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I really want it. It's not out. Well, it is actually, but I've not seen it yet.
Bros.
The new Harry Styles on My Policeman, I want to see.
Oh.
And Bros.
I just saw Bros, so I'll just skip over whatever the hell else you just said. No, Harry Styles, My Policeman. I'll look for it. Yeah. I hadn't even heard of it. But just saw Bros, got to say, yep. Excellent. I thought it was brilliant. Billy Eichner managed to be thoughtful, insightful, on point, representative. It's not perfect. Nothing is perfect. There's no such thing except in maths.
Yep.
But yeah, God, is it good. And the fact that the other guy, Luke McFarlane, he plays the bro. I finally fucking felt like I was in a fucking movie. Not that I'm bro-ish, but I'm quite masculine. And I feel lost in the gay world, or I always have. And it's like, where's my fucking place? Even this movie with Billy Eichner, or like this movie with Billy Eichner, who, like, you know, yes, I was there. I was like, I've had that experience. I'm not gay enough for that. I get called that. That happens to me. Yeah, fucking finally. Yes. Anyway, thank you for that.
Oh, I look forward to it. I mean, there isn't that many good. I have watched quite a few of them, like on Netflix and things. I wouldn't probably be able to remember the names of a lot of them that are okay, but not amazing.
Yes.
But probably Brokeback Mountain sticks out as like the big first mainstream one that I actually really did like.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it for a while, but I did like it when it came out.
If you can find it, there's a movie called Undertow, which is the English translation for Contra Corriente. It's a Latin American, South American film. It's wonderful. And it's a gay ghost story, and it's fucking wonderful. Oh, it's gay / bi. But anyway, no more spoilers. Look that up if you want to watch a quote-unquote gay film. What do you do with belly button fluff?
Pull it out.
Do you make wishes? Do you flick it around? Eat it?
Make wishes?
Store it in a jar? Oh, yeah. So Alex, my partner, that's his thing. He will grab the belly button fluff when he seizes his chance and blow it off his finger and make a wish.
Oh, I like that. That's cute. But no, I've not heard of that before.
Okay. Change rooms. Hot or not?
Not.
Strong not.
No. Oh, do you know, maybe it's just my own experience, but I go to the gym a lot.
Yeah.
And there's nothing hot about it. They stink. There's always somebody like that isn't attractive to me, stood in front of my locker, in my way.
Yeah.
No, they're not hot.
Gotcha. Brilliant. Do you love me?
You know I do.
Oh, I love you too. No, I don't. Yes, I do. No, I do.
You can edit one out. I'll wait to find out.
I'll flip it on you. all right, cool. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Alan. This has been a pleasure. I hope it has been exciting and insightful for all of our listeners. You did mention where people can find you, but just one more time, please.
Yeah, Instagram, The Freedom Coach, or my website is thefreedomcoach.co.uk.
All right. And as we know, he's already too busy and too successful. He really doesn't care about you, really doesn't want to hear from you. Is that true?
No. Do you know what? I enjoy having consultations with people, even if they don't do anything with me after it, because you can... People just sometimes take something from it, or you realize that you do want to work together. So, no, I'm never too busy for that.
Oh, God damn it. You're so lovely. Stop it. No, I kind of agree. I don't want anyone to come that is just using the hour for themselves and has no intention of ever working with me. But if you don't work with me, that's fine. Still come. I still enjoy it. I enjoy all of them.
I'm fine with it.
Mm. Even very occasionally when you have to reject somebody. Mm. Still enjoy it.
Well, you find this, but a lot of people don't really understand what coaching is.
Yeah.
So even if it's helping them with that, I mean, it's amazing what people will tell you the first time they meet you that they've not told other people. I'm sure you find them.
Well, it's a good sign, Alan.
Well, hopefully. But it's, you know, back to your point that everybody calls everything coaching, it makes it very confusing for people.
Yeah.
Whether it's for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we got to put out good content that really speaks to our audience so they get it.
Yeah.
Podcast. Are you enjoying this podcast? Go to Brown Bear Coaching. Cool. Yeah, look, I'll plug my book, which I am serious about plugging, in the outro. So look forward to that. And Alan, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. Night.
You too.
Thanks. Take care, Alan.
You take care. See you soon.
Hola, señores y señoritas. That was Alan and Ed talking coaching, gay life, and all good stuff. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sorry that this is a temporary goodbye. I do want to see Gayborhood come back again, but I'm going to be diving nose first into being a book promoter for the foreseeable future. But I still know how to make this stuff and I still have the heart to do it. If you want to be on the show, message me at edward@gayborhoodpodcast.com. Otherwise, please go to www.agaymanbook.com and learn all about the funky, gay first, queer first, amazing, amazing, amazing book that I created with 32 queer artists that they very much deserve your attention and more than a casual glance. I hope you love it. If you do, please post on social media with hashtag I am a gay man. You can change that if you want to. And also hashtag if you love it, share it. I think it's a very deserving project. I hope you think so too. So sadly, goodbye for now. I'm not far away. Thank you very much for listening and take care. Have a great day. Treat yourself very, 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 very well. You deserve it. Ciao for now. When will I see you again? Da, 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 da. When will we share precious moments?